WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoen, in for Terry Gross. This month, HBO presents a documentary on the life and work of one of the country's most controversial stand-up comics and satirists, Lenny Bruce. Robert Wide's film, Lenny Bruce, Swear to Tell the Truth, uses home movies, interviews, bits from TV shows and live performances, even scenes from cheesy movies that Lenny made, to create an intimate portrait of this complex man. Lenny Bruce was busted many times for drugs and obscenity, but his friends and biographers agree that what really hit a raw nerve was his take on organized religion and his satires of prominent religious leaders like Cardinal Spellman, Billy Graham, and the Pope. Before we talk to Robert Wide, let's listen to a 1958 Lenny Bruce performance. The setting is the Office of Religion Incorporated on Madison Avenue. Billy Graham, Rabbi Weiss, and other religious leaders are meeting when a call comes in from Pope John the 23rd. Oral Roberts takes the call.
Yes, operator. This is 610. Yes, I'll take the charges. Yes. Hello, Johnny. What's shaking, baby? Boy, it's really been an election month, hasn't it, sweetie? Well, listen, I hate to... Yeah, the puff of white smoke knocked me out.
Listen, I hate to bug you, but they're bugging us again with that dumb integration. Now, I don't know why the hell I want to go to school either. Yeah, that school bus, see? Well, we had to give them the bus, but there's two toilets on each bus. They're bugging us. They say, get the religious leaders. Make them talk about it. I know it, but they're getting hip. Yes. They say, no, they don't want no more quotations from the Bible. They want us to come out and say things. They want us to say, let them go to school with them. No, I did walking across the water and snake into the cane. They don't want to hear that jazz anymore. And that stop war jazz, every time the bomb scare, yeah. They keep saying, thou shalt not kill means that, not amend Section A. Yes. They don't want the bomb. Sure, they're commies. No, I ain't getting snotty, but we gotta do something. Yeah. I got two... Yeah, we got some people on our side. We got Scatman Crothers and Stephen Fisher. Don't do no good. No, but yes, that's why I called you. What are we gonna do? Sure, that's easy for you to say. You're over there. Yeah, I know. And thanks for the pepperoni. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, did you dig Spellman on Stars of Jazz? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, sweetie. Yeah. You cooler, too. No, nobody knows you're Jewish.
Robert Wide, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
A lot has been said and a lot's been written about Lenny Bruce. What story, though, did you want to tell with this film?
Well, I just really wanted to tell the story of a guy who tried to speak his mind, who tried to tell the truth, who tried to keep it funny, and paid a price for it. But above all else, I just was intrigued by this guy's evolution. I mean, there's the First Amendment story, but then there's also a story of a guy who changed an entire art form, who really changed everybody who came after him, who really started off not with any intent to be a big rebel or to thwart authority, but just to get laughs. And it's interesting to watch his evolution from basically a Borscht Belt, sort of comedian to somebody who is talking about sensitive issues, about government, about religion, about race, about sex, and at a time when that just wasn't done on stage.
Well, let's play a clip from your film, and perhaps I can ask you to set it up. This is from his appearance on the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scout show. This goes back to 1950, and was when he really gets his first break. Was Arthur Godfrey the kind of Johnny Carson of his day?
Yeah, but I was going to say more powerful, although I guess that's all relative. But basically, the Godfrey Show was a show that if you appeared on and you made a big, and you were a big hit, you had a career. And that was really what broke it for Lenny. He was in the Navy. When he got out of the Navy, he really was bitten by the showbiz bug. His mother, Sally, was a comedian and a stage mother, and she encouraged him. And basically, the excerpt we're going to hear was part of an act that she was doing. Basically, she gave Lenny her act and helped him with his material and his delivery. And your listeners will hear that he started off doing basically what every other comic was doing at the time, impressions and mimicry and funny voices and funny accents. And it was long before he learned how to talk dirty and influence people.
Well, let's listen.
Well, you know, we're not the only country that have impersonators. As a GI overseas, I spent a great deal of time in Bavarian vaudeville houses. And the act that I got the biggest kick out of was the impersonator of the various Hollywood stars. This was all in his native tongue. The Bavarian mimic. Stop the music. Welcome, you lucky fowls. And good ladies, evening and germs. Myself is an impersonator. Just a fragment of voice impersonation with Hollywood is that of the gangster. Mr. Hobdia Cagney. All right, Schmeger. Das war mein Frieden, dirty Frage. Das war mein Schmeigen, die Frage. Die Frage, die Frage, die Frage, no belt. Humph von Bogart. All right, Träger. Trab dich, Schmeiger.
And that's Lenny Bruce performing on the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scout program back in 1950, and it's featured in my guest's film, Robert Wadey's film. It's called Lenny Bruce, Swear to Tell the Truth. As much as you see all that shtick and impersonations, you do see a guy that looks very comfortable and very confident.
Yeah, well, he had watched a lot of other comedians, and he did have some sort of showbiz panache and polish, although his mother does say at that time, basically, every night before he went on stage in front of an audience, he'd be throwing up backstage. So he was nervous. He did have butterflies. But basically, he came out and was able to do his show. As time went on, he sort of became known for being very mellow and very relaxed on stage. And that was, in some way, part of his contribution to the evolution of stand-up comedy, in that instead of having his 40 minutes of prepared material and jokes and one-liners, that he really just came out and talked to the audience as though he was talking to a friend. And Lenny was the first guy who really went up on stage and just continued to talk to the audience as though he were talking to his pals at the table. It was sort of an unheard way of doing stand-up.
Once he got his break on the Arthur Godfrey Show, what kinds of gigs, what kind of clubs did that lead to?
Little vaudeville gigs. He toured around the Eastern Seaboard. I think he even had a couple of gigs in the Catskill area, that sort of thing. And so he was able to make a living. He was able to play these vaudeville houses. What happened was he was playing a gig in Baltimore at a club called the Club Charles, and he met his future wife, who was a stripper, who worked under the name of Hot Honey Harlow. And she was hot. She was really something. And he fell in love. That was his shiksa goddess. And they married and then moved out to California, where Lenny's estranged father lived in Arcadia. He actually came out to Los Angeles to write movies. In fact, Buddy Hackett was a good friend of his. And Buddy lined up a gig for him writing this little kiddie science fiction film called The Rocket Man for, I think it was Fox. But the movie work didn't really pan out. So what happened was he started playing places in the L.A. area and in the Valley that were basically strip joints and dives, toilets, they called them back then. And that was sort of the next phase of his evolution, because he was introducing strippers on stage. He was emceeing these shows. And if you came out and did jokes about, you know, your mother-in-law or your wife's cooking or your income taxes or lady drivers, you'd get a beer bottle thrown at your head. So he did the kind of material that, you know, the drunks in those places wanted to hear.
You have an interview with his mother, I guess we could call her the legendary Sally Marr.
Yeah,
and the first time I saw it, it was so hilarious because you're interviewing her in a beauty shop. She's literally having her hair done.
Yeah.
And I just had to ask, whose idea was that?
Oh, that was her idea. Sally was really something, and I really miss her a lot. Mm-hmm. She died in December of 97. She was just prior to her 91st birthday. Your viewers, your listeners who see the show will be shocked to know that she was 80 when I filmed that interview with her. Now, the film took me 12 years to make, and that interview was shot back in 1987, and she was already 80. And she was just as sprightly and lucid and funny and irreverent and cantankerous as possible. She really became my surrogate grandmother. We became very, very close.
Well, she said an interesting thing about her son, Lenny Bruce, saying that he was like a buddy of mine, that she really treated him more like a pal, perhaps, than a son.
Yeah, and other people who witnessed that relationship vouch for that. They say that, first of all, she was 18 when he was born, so they're about as close in age as a mother and son could be. And people said that their dynamic was much more like a couple of buddies than mother and son. I'll give you one example, too, of how he used to kid with her, and I'll clean this up, I guess, as much as I have to for the air. But he was playing a gig, I want to say somewhere in Northern California, I guess it was. And I have a copy of a letter that he wrote to his mother saying, you know, Mom, I'm doing this gig up here and it's going pretty well. But, you know, I just was told by my accountant that I owe a lot of back taxes, so things are kind of tough financially. And he said, you know, there's a cat house up here that I was visiting. And they said, you know, they're always looking for more girls to bring in. And even though, you know, you're not a spring chicken anymore, they said that so long as you have a nice rear end on you, they could use you. So why don't you come up and then you can help out financially and, you know, we can get some bills paid. And this was the kind of letter that he just jot off to her. And it was a little raunchier than I just paraphrased it. But and she would get it and she would be laughing. She would be in hysterics. So that's the kind of rapport that they had. And so I really think, and other people have agreed, that the key to understanding Lenny in some ways is knowing Sally. And Sally instilled a lot of thoughts and philosophy in his head as a kid, which later came out in his work.
She seemed really proud of him.
She was. She was. Well, you know, he was her son, and she was a Jewish mother. So, of course, her son was a genius. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, then she lost her son years later and watched him go through this terrible ordeal. And hanging out with Sally, you could talk about Lenny, and she would just tell you funny anecdotes, and she'd be laughing and carrying on and telling you the greatest stories, and you'd be laughing. But then after a while, when it got quiet, you'd look at her, and very often her eyes were welled up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these years later, the fact that she had lost her only boy still certainly had its impact on her.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we're going to take a short break. And our guest today on Fresh Air is Robert Wiedy, and his film Lenny Bruce, Swear to Tell the Truth, is being featured this month on HBO. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is filmmaker Robert Wiedy. We're talking about his documentary of Lenny Bruce called Lenny Bruce, Swear to Tell the Truth. Lenny Bruce was a regular on the Steve Allen Show. Why was Steve Allen so supportive of him? And he clearly was very enthusiastic.
Oh, he was a big champion. And you have to realize, well, it's a bit of a misnomer to say he was a regular because he only appeared three times, twice in 1959. And once in 1964, an appearance which was censored and shelved and ultimately lost, but uncovered for our film, thankfully. But yeah, Steve was a big champion of Lenny's. And this was at a time when Lenny already had this reputation of being uncontrollable and being irreverent and being scatological. And the idea of him doing television was sort of out of the question, but Steve championed championed Lenny and told the network he wanted him on, and Steve had the power at that time that he could basically put on a show whoever he wanted.
Your film does feature a bit that he did that the censors did yank. And first of all, I'm curious where you found this. Where was this hidden?
Well, it's interesting because this was sort of always the holy grail for Lenny Bruce aficionados. This was the 1964 appearance, which was lost. And Steve Allen, in his book Funny People, has a chapter on Lenny. He talks about this appearance, and he talks about it being shelved and lost, and bemoans the fact that it will never be seen. Well, I found it at the UCLA Film Archives, who have a lot of Steve Allen stuff on deposit, some on videotape, some on kinescope. And basically, I was going through their records and came across this card indicating that there was a Lenny Bruce appearance from 1964. And I brought it up to Dan Einstein, one of the fellows at the archive, and I said, is this accurate? And he said, yeah. And he was familiar with the piece. I don't know if that he had screened it or viewed it. But I said, well, if this is true, this is a lost episode that never aired, and they weren't aware of that at the archives, and they put it up for me, and I screened it, and sure enough, there it was, much as Steve Allen had described it in his book. So I had the pleasure of calling up Steve Allen and telling him I'd found the missing appearance.
Well, let's play that clip, and this is Lenny Bruce in 1964, an appearance on the Steve Allen Show, an appearance that was censored.
Now, as far as the present litigation I'm involved with, I'd like to perhaps give you a four-letter word that starts with an S and ends with a T. First time on television, I'm not going to look at you when I say this, because this way I can't get busted. You don't know who said it. The band said it. Starts with an S and ends with a T, and the word is snot. I know a lot of people thinking out there now. See, it's clever up to a point, but just for a cheap laugh, he just say snot. Supposing I could tell you something about snot that is so unique that you say, is that the truth about snot? What a fool I've been! I can't believe that all these years. Is that documented? Yes, that's the truth about snot. Well, hear this about snot. You can't get snot over a suede jacket.
And that's Lenny Bruce from an appearance on the Steve Allen Show that never saw the light of day. Well, and Lenny Bruce is very coy about this because he sets it up as the four-letter word that begins with S and ends with T.
Yeah. And
being
then
very playful about it.
Right. And Steve Allen fought for it and even went back and filmed this introduction to the piece, warning people that Lenny was going to say a word that many of them would probably find offensive. And if they wanted to, they should change their channels right now and come back in 10 minutes. And so Steve sort of filmed this after the fact, and they cut it in to see if that would work as a disclaimer. And they still decided it was just too much for audiences of 1964 to bear. I guess they thought it would be the end of civilization or something. So they shelved it.
When did he become known as the sick comic, and who called him that?
Gee, that's a good question. I don't know who's credited with actually first coming up with that. But I think Lenny's reputation for sick comedy really started in the mid and late 50s. Again, he was working these little dives in L.A. in the early and mid 50s. And then what happened was he went up and played an extended gig at a place called Ann's 440 in the North Beach district of San Francisco. And he was up there for a long time and really kind of developed up there. And oddly enough, was championed by two very powerful critics at the time. Was Herb Kane and Ralph Gleason, who was a music critic, a jazz critic, who really dug Lenny. And the two of them started to write about Lenny. So that was sort of the next phase of his evolution. Anyway, then he came back down to Los Angeles and was playing better clubs. He was playing the Crescendo in Los Angeles on the Strip and places like that. And again, his reputation just grew and grew. He never reached the mass acceptance level of someone like a Shelley Berman or Nichols and May. He always remained at somewhat cult status, but his cult was very devoted and large enough.
He's been quoted as saying, "I am not a comic, I am Lenny Bruce." What was he trying to say by that? Was he trying to distance himself from comedy?
Well, I think that was in the later years. You know, that's really the quote that Paul Krasner gives us. Paul Krasner was a good friend of his. Paul's still around, a comedian certainly in his own right, and a political satirist. And Paul was the editor of The Realist, which was an underground sort of counterculture magazine, which actually still comes out. And Paul edited Lenny's autobiography, How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. And but when Paul was interviewing Lenny for The Realist, he asked him what the role of a comedian was. And Lenny didn't give any philosophical answer with deep social meaning. He said the obligation of a comedian is to get a laugh every 15 or 25 seconds because you're working for a club owner who has to sell seats and sell drinks, and that's your obligation, is to get laughs. That's what a comedian does. So years later, when Lenny got very serious on stage and was talking a lot about his legal problems, and sometimes the laughs were few and far between, Krasner said to him backstage one night, he said, well, what happened to your theory about what a comedian does, getting laughs every 15 to 25 seconds? And Lenny said, well, you know, I'm not a comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce. Hmm. And it was just his observation of what he was becoming at that time, that he was becoming an icon. He was becoming a symbol. And at that point, a lot of times people would show up at his shows not to hear brilliant comedy, but to see if he would get arrested, to see if they could see a part of history and go home and tell their friends that they saw Lenny Bruce get busted.
Robert Wydie's documentary on Lenny Bruce, Swear to Tell the Truth, is showing this month on HBO. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.